Okay, so what are things parents and potentially new step-parents, what are they to do during this season of they're dating, they're engaged, they're trying to check in with their child, they're seeing some emotional responses? What do they do about that?
The parent has to be non-defensive because they're going to hear things they don't want to hear. Because the common myth is that I'm going to be happy, so my kids therefore will be happy. And that really isn't true very often, as you know.
From the Family Life Podcast Network, this is Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. This podcast brings together timeless wisdom and practical help and hope to blended families and those who love them. Just want to let you know before we jump into the content today that registration for Blended and Blessed is now available online. Go to blendedandblessed.com and learn how you can be a part of this live stream event all over the world next April 25th, 2020. If you are seriously dating, nearly engaged, or already engaged and planning to marry and form a blended family, this episode is for you. Or maybe you have a friend or a family member in that situation. Please listen so you'll know how to be of support to them. Doctors Jeff and Judy Parziel are passionate about equipping families today and empowering churches to effectively minister to them. The challenges of working through their own issues, their own remarriage and stepfamily life, led them to start InStep Ministries. Jeff is a family pastor, an author, and counselor with 30 years of counseling and ministry experience. As a research health psychologist, Judy understands the immense challenges facing today's families. The two of them, Jeff and Judy, have been married over 20 years, each bringing three children into their marriage. They've co-authored many resources. Today, we're going to be talking about marrying with children. You can find more information about all their resources online at their website, instepministries.com. I asked Jeff and Judy, a couple that's planning to marry, what are they thinking as the wedding day approaches?
I think they're hoping that this family will be something better than the last family they were in, perhaps, or better than the family they grew up in. I think they're imagining that the kids will get along and they'll like each other and that they'll be, you know, one big happy family, and it'll happen fairly quickly. Now, all those things are fantasies, but I think that's what they're hoping for. And I don't blame them, because I think that's what they should be hoping for. I want to do it better this time is a pretty common feeling and thought. And that this time I'm a little wiser, I've chosen better, I'm a little more experienced or mature, and so I know this one will be better than it was before.
I want to key in on something you just said. We're going to talk about some of those expectations in just a few minutes, but that one piece that you said about they're comparing it to the past, or at least the past is somehow influencing how they're thinking about what's happening in the present. They want this to be better, different than the past. Well, let's unpack that a little bit. Sometimes when we're basing the present on the past, we don't have a good perspective on the present. Does that make any sense?
Of course it does. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so how do you think that works for couples, for the average person coming into a blended family? What are they comparing it to? And what is their need for this to be different?
Well, most of the couples that we work with are probably comparing it to a prior relationship. And it could be childhood if it's a first relationship for them. But for most of them, they're comparing it to a past relationship where there was abuse, neglect, abandonment. The things that they don't know are that the seeds of that new relationship are inside of them. They're gonna help create that. So they put a lot of expectation on their partner and not enough on themselves. I think that they perhaps were wounded or disappointed, and so they're hoping that their new partner will be able to kind of fix or do those things differently or better than the last time. And I think the biggest struggle is that they don't pay enough attention to their own healing or recovery from those last relationships or from childhood issues. And so they bring them right along with them, and then they're surprised when things happen just the same in that new relationship.
Okay, so if I'm somebody listening to this conversation right now, I'm thinking, what, are you telling me I'm messed up? Are you telling me I'm carrying a lot of baggage from the past and I don't even see it? And you're saying this new relationship is like wrong or something? What are you saying to me?
I'm not saying the relationship is wrong. I'm saying that it's naive to imagine that there won't be struggles in the new relationship. And so the real key is, if I'm entering a new relationship, my ability to handle the stresses and the challenges of that new relationship, if I'm assuming this one will be better because my last one was so awful and you're a nicer person, then I'm setting myself up for failure because I'm not realizing that I've got to walk in the door and confront a whole new set of challenges and struggles with a whole new person. And so my capacity to listen, to be patient, to let the relationship grow, to handle those challenges without becoming anxious and looking for quick fixes, that's going to be the key, as opposed to assuming that it's all on you or because we've made a better choice that we shouldn't have all those struggles.
Mm. Okay, Judy, and that's the point, right? The reason we are having this candid conversation right now is because we want to help people have the relationship dream that they are desiring. We want to move them in that direction, but we also want to help them get there by recognizing the things that are not actually conducive to them accomplishing the dream. Does that make any sense? What do you think, Judy? It
totally makes sense. In fact, that was one of the conversations Jeff and I had many times after we were first married. In retrospect, we looked back and identified 12 different factors that we call success indicators that we realized that we were not aware of before we got married. And because we weren't ready yet or hadn't addressed some of these issues in ourselves or even recognized what was going on in our children, it set us up for more problems than was necessary. So that's why we try to get couples to focus on, as they prepare for new step family life, that they need to go over some of these success factors and have conversations, as well as pray about them and ask God if they're ready in those areas, because it's much more advantageous if they deal with it up front than to have it confront them with a problem and then realize that there's anxiety going on in them and they don't know how to make things better at that moment.
Now, you're saying you and Jeff didn't really examine these before you got married, right?
Correct.
And how long you guys been married at this point?
28 years. Just had our anniversary.
So there's hope for the listener.
Absolutely.
Who's maybe thinking, man, we are behind the ball. Oh no, what are we going to do? Okay, good. So we're going to help you with these success factors in just a minute. But before we do that, let me just kind of pull back and go, I'm mindful of somebody listening to us right now who is engaged to someone, and this is your first marriage. You don't have a past breakup or relationship, or you weren't widowed, or you're not bringing children necessarily. Maybe this is your first entrance into a family experience. You're marrying somebody who has kids. It's a little different for that person because maybe their expectations are based on what they know and think family is. So Jeff, would you say that what's the blind spot for that person you would want them to be aware of?
I think the biggest blind spot is that their picture of what they think marriage is going to be like may not be exactly the way it is. And so are they willing to discover and maybe blend those two pictures together? They're entering into a system that already exists. It's already been functioning at some level for some period of time. And so they're walking into an existing system. And so one of their ideas is that I'm going to create a new system. And I think the blind spot is going to be, I'm walking into a system that already exists. I need to find out how I fit into that system. And at some point down the road, I'll be able to have some effect on that system, as opposed to, I'm going to come into a brand new system that I have total control over. And that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's good.
That's where one of those blind spots is often with a new parent that doesn't have children, where they come in and they see things in the children that they think they can help the other parent improve upon and start making suggestions that are interpreted as criticisms. And so I would really suggest that that person also get some understanding of child development and what to expect at different ages and how to first become a friend with those children, because just as Jess has mentioned, if they don't do this, they'll go in and they'll be received with resistance because they're trying to change the family the way it was.
Okay, so Judy, you mentioned some success factors. I know these are listed in your resource, Marrying with Children. We may not get through all 12 of them, but let's hit some of them. Give me two or three and let's talk around them.
All right. First of all, one of the things we realized is that we had not allowed adequate time to lapse between the time of divorce and remarriage because the children were not ready. And this was a readiness issue that we didn't realize existed for kids at that time. And as we know now, children are usually a good year emotionally behind processing than the adult. So it's important that you look at the children and yourself and determine whether or not you've really grieved those losses and whether you're ready to prepare for a new journey in stepfamily life.
Now, I got to tell you, I have quoted you two many, many times through the years. Kids are a year behind, emotionally behind the adults when the adults are ready to marry. What I've often shared is that that's kind of a rule of thumb. It depends on the age of the child, depends on the family circumstance and the story that is the foundation to this whole experience. But the point here is they're not ready when you're ready. Now, somebody just hearing that for the first time, listening to this conversation, probably just had a minor heart attack.
Yeah.
So we got to unpack that a little bit. What do you mean they're not ready when the adults are ready?
I think in general, what it means is that they're just, for many of them, they're just getting used to the fact that their parents divorced or split up or broke up, and that now they're living in a, perhaps in a single parent family. So they're making the adjustment to that. And they're adjusting to all the changes that happen from that breakup, and maybe a new school, new homes, new friends, loss of pets, all kinds of things have changed. And they're adapting to those changes. About the time they're getting ready to feel comfortable with that, the parent now throws a new change at them, which is, here's that new person that I'm dating, and we're thinking about a relationship. And so now when they're just getting comfortable adjusting to not being in that original family, not spending quality time with one parent or the other, and now they have a new human being that perhaps has children of his or her own that is being introduced to them. And so emotionally, they've got to make another leap and another adjustment. And depending on their own personality, they're either going to be angry about that or going to be depressed about that. They're going to react in some emotional way, but they're going to want to please their parent. So they're going to act as if it's okay. And that's often a place where parents make a mistake of assuming that the child is okay when really they're just trying to make their parent happy. The last thing we want to do is make a parent that's already been through a breakup unhappy again, because they assume that that unhappiness is the reason why the original breakup happened. And so they're going to pretend like everything's fine, or they're going to act out in some way. And the parent who really desperately wants to reconnect with another adult is going to tend to ignore that or minimize the effect that that's going to have.
In other words, they miss each other emotionally. It's easy for them to end up in different places and not realize it.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes kids contribute to this because they kind of go possum on their parents. Like as you said there, Jeff, they don't really show how they're feeling and maybe some of the inner angst and questions and things that they're wrestling with because they don't want to hurt their parents' feelings. They don't want to marginalize that relationship with their parent. I mean, that's where their investment is. Like we're trying to find stability here in this new family relationship. I don't want to make it worse. And so they don't always just come out with that. And so parents can be duped, is that the right word, into thinking everything's good. My kids just want me to be happy. And of course, that's true, but it's also true that the kids are trying to find stability and happiness of their own. And so sometimes those things at the end of the day clash.
Well, and the biggest challenge is that most children are not as verbal as adults. And so they're not going to verbalize those kinds of things. They're going to act it out. And so we really encourage dating parents to pay attention to what's going on with your child. Is he doing a little worse in school? Is he acting out a little bit more? Is he a little bit more resistant to discipline? Is he not doing his chores? Is he hoarding food? Is just looking for those nonverbal signs that something is happening inside that child. And that's generally the kinds of things a parent, especially a parent that's now dating and falling in love, is going to be a little less aware of, because they're putting some focus on that new partner. And so they're not going to be attending to some of those that are fairly subtle, but some subtle changes that that child is making in a nonverbal way of saying, I'm upset with what's happening right now, but I don't know what to do about it. I don't really have any control over it. And so you got to pick it up from those signs.
Yeah. Okay. So what are things parents and potentially new step parents, what are they to do during this season of they're dating, they're engaged, they're trying to check in with their child, they're seeing some emotional responses? What do they do about that?
Well, I think depending on the age, they can start to have conversations about this or ask the children what it is that they think about this. But what I've noticed in children is that they're always saying to the parent, yes, we want to get married and this is going to be great, et cetera. And parents will come in and say, our kids can't wait for us to be together. And the minute they get married, then all kinds of things begin to happen with the kids, because the kids were not made aware of what all of the changes would be. So, you know, they may know that they were going to move or get a different house, but they didn't know how everything would go down. Would they have to share a bedroom? Would they have to change schools? Would they have to come and go at different times to their other parents for visitation? All of these things create new routines and things for kids that when they're not expecting it, they don't know how to cope with it.
I think the word for parents would be loss. It creates another loss for
Correct.
Their child.
Yes.
From the child's point of view.
There's a principle called helping a child feel felt. And what that means is that I go to a child and say, I really want to understand where you are. This is a non-judgmental conversation. It's okay if you're confused, frightened, angry, concerned. I want to understand how you feel. So this feel felt gives that child a sense that my mom or dad really cares and understands me. I think we have to almost anticipate some of the questions that a child would ask if they were going to ask. You know, you're probably wondering what's going to happen if I wind up marrying this person. So anticipating those questions gives the child then permission to say, yeah, you know, I am wondering about those things. What is going to happen to us? I noticed that, you know, he has a child my age, or who knows what it might be, but giving the child permission not only to talk about those things, but make sure that they feel heard, understood, feel felt, that their feelings are validated. And they're not going to initiate that conversation ever. It's something that the parent has to go and create a safe place for that child to start talking about those things. And then the parent has to be non-defensive, because they're going to hear things they don't want to hear. Because the common myth is that I'm going to be happy, so my kids therefore will be happy. And that really isn't true very often, as you know.
Okay, you just said a myth. Because I'm happy, my kids are going to be happy. Because I'm thrilled about this marriage, my kids are going to be thrilled about this marriage. Did I just hear you say that that's an unrealistic expectation?
Totally.
Yes.
We're going to be one big happy family, which is just a myth. It's a fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. And there are layers to this, of course. Like, I always say to people, there are parts of a child that are really happy that you're happy. It's the, wow, my mom met this great guy and he's taking care of her. And I love the way she smiles when she's around him. I think that's marvelous for my mother. I'm happy for her. And yet, I got to share a bedroom. I got somebody telling me to get out of the bathroom because they need to get into it. Like that. And this guy that my mom loves so dearly is telling me that the way I do X, Y, or Z is incorrect. And that's stuff I don't like. So it's okay. It's not just black or white. Either they love it or they hate it. It's layers. But the point is, you as a parent or step-parent have to be prepared to hear some of this and created a safe environment for the child to articulate that. Otherwise, they're not going to tell you, and then you're going to be stuck. So coach the parent listening to us right now, just for a second. What do they have to do internally in order to not be defensive when their child shares some of this hard stuff?
They need to be able to understand that all of these things come in stages, and it doesn't need that instant fix. in step family life, we always see that there's a great need when these different issues arise, that people want to immediately fix the problem. I want to make that child feel okay, or I want to change how my spouse is relating to my child so it's better. And one of the hardest things we learned in our journey was that in many cases, when the problems arise, there is no fix. The only thing you can do is choose to manage it. And most of us don't like managing things because it means that we really have to look at our own ways and rely on God's peace and His grace to replace our own anxiety. And that it's a daily thing that we have to go to the Lord in prayer and ask for His guidance so that we can help that child move along, as well as help the bonding and the formation of the step family. But it means there will be consistent ups and downs at first, and then you'll begin to see some gains.
Now, Judy, I can just hear somebody saying, but what do I do with my guilt? You're telling me that my child may not love this experience at the beginning, and over time they can grow on them and things will change. But in the meantime, I recognize that this is hard for them. I'm happy. They're not happy. I feel guilty about that. What do I do with my guilt?
Well, I think that's one of those things that it comes up when you don't realize that this is one of those aspects of stepfamily life that is going to happen. So I think there's several things that parents end up feeling guilty about because you've made a mistake. But the parent needs to realize that they didn't do this intentionally. This could have been a blind spot or just an unexpected result of the experience itself. And so, you know, confessing that to the Lord, as well as to your children, and say, I feel really bad that you're feeling this way, that maybe I put you in this position. It was not my intent for you to feel this way. Please forgive me. But are you willing to work on it with me so that we each get to feeling better about this situation?
Mm-hmm. That's good. Mm-hmm. You're right.
That is good.
This is an emotional place for a parent because they probably are experienced lots of different emotions. And some of them are very diverse. I'm excited, but I'm scared. I'm excited for the possibilities for me, but I'm worried about my kids. I feel some guilt and I'm taking them through another big change. I think we have to reconcile those things inside ourselves and create a safe space inside of us to say, I've got to be able to hold those differences in tension while I walk this process through with my child. Talking about what their expectations are, talking about what their fears are, and sharing some of those concerns with them, depending on their age, obviously, if they're 3 or 4 or not. But being able to create a space inside of ourselves where I say, you know what, this is part of the experience is reconciling some very different kinds of emotions. And that may be a readiness factor, my ability to recognize that I'm excited and I think there's possibilities here, but this is going to be some hard work for me. It's going to be some tough sledding at first for my children. And I'm willing to walk through that, but I'm going to be able to hold in kind of abeyance the positive feelings, but also those concerns. And I'm going to be able to embrace those things that my child tells me. I think it's a lot better to do that way before there's a marriage than afterwards when you're trying to do cleanup work or you're trying to do damage control.
Oh, that's a really good word. I am mindful that we've only talked about one success factor. And, you know, we're going to get back to that in just a second. But I can imagine somebody listening to us going, yeah, all this stuff that they're talking about, this is why we're just going to live together.
Living together is exactly the same thing without the marriage license. You're still trying to put a family together with two adults and children. And somehow our society believes that when we live together, that the impact emotionally on either the adults or the children is not going to be the same. And it is exactly the same. So whether you marry or not, you have maybe the legal complications with the marriage, but you're still going to encounter the same thing.
It seems to me it's even more challenging with a cohabiting environment because there's not a sense of permanence.
I was just going to get to that. Without commitment, and that permanence in the mind of the two adults that are in the relationship, it is going to be much more difficult to be willing to work through some of these hard issues, to be adaptable and flexible with one another, and to provide that kind of security for the kids.
Jeff, imagine a parent sitting down with their teenage children, maybe young adult children, maybe elementary age kids, and having one of those little parent-child conversations, and it goes something like this. You know, everybody around us is living together. That's what the world says to do. It seems that God's word is pretty clear that sexual relationship outside of marriage is not reflective of God's nature and how he made us, and it's not best, and his provision for us is that we trust him with commitment. And so I am working very hard in this dating relationship to manage our sexual relationship and keep that at bay until we marry. And so we are going to resist the temptation to move in, and we're going to continue to date with integrity. And I just want you to know that's why the wedding is planned, when it is, where it is, how it is, and we will not be moving in with one another until then. What do you think the impact of that morally, spiritually, would be on children?
I think that's powerful. You know, more than anything else, what a child wants to know is what's going to happen, and that the parent is going to be there for them. But I think what you just shared is inspiring and powerful. And I think that the average child may not get it at the time, but they're gonna respect that parent, and they're gonna see modeled for them something perhaps they've never seen before, which is two people that are committed to living life for Christ and role modeling that for their children. I think that's unbelievably powerful.
Yeah, what's being modeled is trusting God.
Trusting God, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Judy, let's go on. What's another success factor?
Well, let's see, that the couple has dealt with their emotional issues from prior relationships or marriages, and that they have resolved these. And so this means that, you know, if there's still a lack of forgiveness or problems going on between the co-parents, et cetera, that if those aren't resolved ahead of time, you're bringing those into the new relationship. And that can be very complicated for a new spouse.
Is there a common tip you usually give people along that line in terms of moving them in the right direction?
Well, obviously, we encourage premarital counseling. And in doing so, you can do some of the different assessments that allow you to see if you're well prepared or compatible or where you're at emotionally. And I would suggest any of those things would help a couple recognize perhaps what emotional issues are still lagging there. You can usually pick that up in tone of voice or reference to the former spouse. And that's always a key, that if there's that resentment and that lack of forgiveness, not only is it going to affect the new marriage, but it affects the children that are involved in it. So that lack of forgiveness is just one issue. But, you know, it could be that the person had a spouse that was unfaithful and cheated on them. And that person is going to bring into the new relationship a great fear or anxiety that accompanies that, can I trust this person? And as we both know, that can really sabotage a new relationship.
Oh, that's good. You mentioned online assessments. Symbus is one program that's out there. Mm-hmm. Prepare Enrich is another. I have a related inventory on the website smartstepfamilies.com. You can take the couple checkup there, give you a very thorough report of your relationship, its strengths. It'll give you a sense of where maybe some of the blind spots are, and it will also affirm the things that are going well for you at this point in your relationship. So I think that's helpful. A couple checkup, it's at smartstepfamilies.com. Judy, what's another success factor?
One of the big ones is legal and financial issues from prior relationships are resolved. So as we well know, that in a second marriage or relationship, oftentimes the number one issue that couples have is about the parenting and the children. But the second issue they have tends to do with finances and how they're going to deal with those and manage them, et cetera. And as you well know, given the recent book that you've prepared, Ron, with your co-authors, this is a really important area to look at because combining finances, one parent gets child support, one parent pays child support. You have kids with different needs, different insurance carriers, et cetera. All this gets very complicated for parents. And the more that they can talk about this, how we're going to manage money up front, are we going to have one pot, two pots, or three pots? That's just one of the ways you can look at managing money. All of these things will help to get them off on a better start with these kinds of things.
Yes, Judy, thank you. You're referencing the book that we've written, The Smart Step Family Guide to Financial Planning. And we did a podcast with my co-authors on that book, Greg Pettis and David Edwards. And that podcast, feel free to look it up. It's called Financing Togetherness in Blended Families. And you're right, there's some challenges there. But what is it, Judy, that is really happening? Is it that money is an issue, or is it somehow that how money impacts the merging of the family?
Well, I think that it's the latter. It's the way that you manage it and what it represents. So it's similar to original marriages or first marriages as well, or how your parents handled money. Every person that comes into a relationship, we say, is either going to be a squeezer or a spender. So we all have those spending personalities or managing money the way we do. But the big issue, I think, is that money oftentimes represents power in a relationship. And so if somebody has more in the past, oftentimes that meant that they got to be the decision makers. And this is one area of problem for the relationship itself. And so I think they need to each have equal input onto how they think it best needs to be managed. And as you well know, some of the things that come up are one child may have more expenses or more needs than a child from the other spouse. And so the competition gets going. And it's really about the attitudes of our heart, you know, how generous we choose to be and how much we want to actually give up our power in some of those situations.
Oh, I think that's so well said.
I think Judy is exactly right. I think it's about personality. It's about power and control. But more importantly, it's really about the capacity of that couple to have conversations about hard topics like money or vacations or whatever they are. The capacity of the couple to have hard conversations gently and respectfully so that each one is able to articulate what they need from the other. And money is probably a place where that becomes really tough to do because we have so many emotional connections to money.
It occurs to me as you say that, that's the action point for our listener right now. Somebody who's seriously dating, maybe they're engaged, planning to get married. Every topic that we are bringing up is a conversation for you to have. And it may involve a series of conversations around money, for example, to try to begin to get a plan together of how you're going to do that. Sometimes I think couples intuitively ignore these topics because they kind of know it might bring something up. But that doesn't mean running away from it is the right thing to do. Putting your head in the sand is, no, take your head out of the sand and go ahead and deal with it now, because that actually helps you and this other person move toward each other in solidarity. And by the way, if you can't, if these conversations don't move you toward one another, you might want to listen to that.
Good point. One of the things that we look at when we look at couples and their readiness for marriage is their ability to have these kinds of conversations calmly, to regulate themselves emotionally so that they can learn how to manage differences and not let those differences affect their relationship. And so as we evaluate their readiness, what we look for is, can you have a hard conversation and still value each other, respect each other, and value the relationship? Or do these conversations, in a sense, create some distance or tension between the two of you that you don't know how to manage?
Oh, that's good. And I'm amazed, as I've done a lot of premarital counseling in the past, as you guys know, how when that happens, when couples get at odds with one another, they ignore the implications of it, or they downplay it, or they minimize it. And then it's kind of like, nope, but we're getting married and we're in love. They shouldn't do that, huh?
They should never do that.
No, because that's going to come up again. It's absolutely, positively going to come up and surface again. And if they, it should be a place where they recognize that they're missing some of the skills to handle some of these complex problems that arise in stepfamily life. In other words, if they're lacking good communication skills, they know how to, as Jeff said, regulate the pace of a communication and their emotions. Do they know a basic understanding that when you get angry, you call for a timeout and you each take some time away from each other until you cool down enough and let the cortisol go back to its normal level so that you can come back with a clear mind and discuss it again? So communication is important. What we find is a lot of people do not have good conflict management skills. They haven't learned them in their families of origin, and they don't recognize why that's so important in the stepfamily life.
And in their previous marriage, they may have learned bad conflict resolution skills.
That's often the case. Mm-hmm.
Or at least habits, whatever you want to call them, and reactivity that gets in the way of being able to do that in this new relationship. Or the fear that if I bring something up or say it a certain way or you act a certain way, then here's what that means for us. You know, all of that just complicates managing conflict, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
One of the key myths that couples will have is that if we're not getting along, it probably means this isn't a good fit. That a good new relationship will mean that it'll be a hand in glove. We won't have these kinds of arguments or disagreements. And the truth is that it's always going to be the case. It's just how we manage them that determines the success of our relationship.
Mm-hmm. Good. I think we've done 4 or 5 success factors. Judy, give us another one.
Well, another one is to address how far along you are in your Christian walk or your maturity or what that means to you. Basically, what we're looking for is somebody who really has a complete identity in Christ and gains their value and worth from God. And why this is so important in a relationship is because as a new stepmom or stepdad, you're going to oftentimes feel like you get no respect. The kids don't like you. You're going to get a lot of negative. And this, after a while, can really be wearing on anyone. And so if you're looking for your identity and your purpose to come from a positive relationship that hasn't yet had the chance to develop, then you're going to get really down and probably negative yourself. So this is one of those things that maturity in Christ can help a great deal with, because he's our source of grace. He's our source that helps us through the times of anxiety and those levels that create tension where we don't want to talk. All of those negative moods or emotions that we have. But if we know that we are each mature in our walk with God and seek our identity in him, then we're more likely to come back with a sound, reasoned mind when we're trying to discuss the issues.
Let me just reflect that back to you, Judy, and say it a different way and have you react to it. Are you saying that my identity is not wrapped up in my marriage?
Yes, because your worth, your value comes from your identity in Christ, not another person. And this is where I think the American delusion is that we're so wrapped up in how we look, what people think, whether we're rejected, any of those things, that at a drop of a hat, we can lose our sense of worth. Whereas if we're grounded in Christ, our sense of worth comes from him and cannot be taken away from us, even by a spouse or an angry stepchild.
You know, one of the ideas or principles floating around right now is that we not worship our marriage, but that we worship God, and our marriage is part of our worship of God. And I think that's essentially what Judy is saying, that when I draw my worth and value from God, it really affects how I'm going to react to a stepchild, how I'm going to react to my marriage. It means that I'm going to stay grounded in who I am and my value, whether my new family is going well or not, or whether my new stepchild likes me or not, that I stay grounded on the fact that I know that I'm a child of God and that my value and worth comes from that, not from what my new child or even my new spouse thinks of me. So I'm not going to worship the marriage. I'm going to worship God, and I'm going to put my marriage underneath my relationship with God.
I think that's so critical, in particular when you're entering a family situation with dynamics, as you mentioned there, that you can't control. You have to have an identity in something other than what's happening in your home. Otherwise, you forget where true north is.
Exactly, yes.
And so this is good. We get grounded in God, and he fuels us to then deal with what's in front of us with the people in our lives. Let me go a little bit different direction, guys. I think we need to ask a hard question here. Somebody's dating, planning to get married, maybe they're engaged. We're talking about the Christian aspects of this. What would the Christian faith say about questions they should ask biblically about getting married again if one or both have been divorced? This is a complicated, multi-layered thing, and we're not going to unpack all that Scripture has to say about this. That's not our objective today. But maybe the one central question that somebody who has been through a divorce will ask themselves is, am I free to marry? I'm not asking you to give an answer to that question because we don't know the circumstances of any one person who's listening. But what do you advise them to do in order to wrestle with that question well?
Well, couple of things. First of all, I think that they need to be honest with themselves about the role that they played in the breakup of their last marriage. And have they been repentant about the things that they were responsible for? And have they asked for forgiveness? Have they made amends in that situation? When I'm working with a couple and they're asking those kinds of questions, the first thing I ask is, have there been forgiveness of you, of your former spouse, or have you repented of anything that you did in that relationship that you now know you feel guilty about or you take responsibility for? I think that before a holy God, I need to come and say, I have done all I can do to repent, forgive, make amends for that past relationship. And I am now at a position where I feel like I've taken that responsibility. So I think that's where I would guide a couple or an individual that asks that question is, are you clear on those things that God would have you do to reconcile your relationship with him and to reconcile a relationship with a former partner if there's some things you need to take responsibility for? And that could mean I spend some time really searching Scripture to make sure that I've done those things that I think God would have me do. You're right. Theology is all over the place on this one, as you know, Ron.
Mm-hmm. And because we walk out our faith in the context of a local church, we always here at Family Life encourage people to ask those questions, to search the Scriptures, you know, examine 1 Corinthians 7 and Matthew 19, along with a pastor in their local church. I mean, you're going to walk out your marriage in the context of that congregation. You might want to know what they think about this. You might want to come alongside somebody and say, help me understand this, and let's examine my life in light of this, and give me your counsel about how to move forward so we can continue in our relationship with you, the church, under your authority and guidance, all of which helps a couple be more rooted long-term in the life of that local group of Christians. That's an important process to go through. And even if you feel a little anxious about asking those questions, that's probably a good indicator that you need to ask those questions.
Both that, as a pastor, as a therapist, we always ask that question of a couple when they come in for premarital. Tell me about your faith. Tell me about what your faith says about what you've experienced and what your faith is telling you now. And so we want to have that conversation with them because it's important that they have worked through that themselves. And so, yes, the best advice we could give is go to your pastor or someone on the staff and ask them what their beliefs about divorce or remarriage are, or just what their, you know, what their position on that is. And we will share that with them. When we do all the premarital work at our church, for example, we'll share with them what the church's belief system is on that, what we think God is saying through his word. And we'll ask them to personally walk through that process for themselves or as a couple to know that, yes, we have done those things that we think need to be done to reconcile with a past relationship or with a holy God. So great advice, Ron.
I know there's a whole lot more success factors in your list. I'm going to refer our listener to your resource, Marrying with Children, for that. I want to kind of wrap up our conversation, guys, by asking you this. What are the red lights, yellow lights, and green lights that couples should be paying attention to as it relates to this idea of you're not just marrying a person, you're marrying everything that comes with them. You're creating a family. And so it's the green lights are not just about you and that other adult. It's about your kids, their kids, the past, previous relationships, extended family, future mother-in-laws and in-laws, and et cetera. There's a lot there that blended families have to navigate. So on the front end, what are some of those red lights and yellow lights that you want people to pay attention to?
I would say some of the red lights for us are if there's a parent that's disconnected from their children or still involved in legal issues with a former spouse, if there are some key spiritual differences between the individuals, if their core values don't line up, if one of the people is rigid and inflexible, these are things we look for. If there's still some ongoing anger or angst between a person and their former partner, if there's any issues at all, mental health, addiction, habits, anything that is being untreated or is not being dealt with at the time, those are the things that we would look for as red lights and perhaps even strong orange lights, you know, caution lights. But and those are not things that we tell couples. Those things don't disqualify you, but those are things that you should take a pause and take a look at those things. I think, you know, for us at least, some key spiritual differences or core values definitely create some red lights that need to be resolved. And those are not things you can just ignore and walk through and imagine it's going to be okay. So an orange light might be how the children are functioning. Are they having some emotional issues? Are they struggling with some area? That would be an orange light. I think I'd like to see some attention paid to that before the couple moves forward. Honey, you want to join in on that?
Sure. I think another yellow light is, have you discussed differences in parenting philosophies? If a person is really honest and says that they have the idea that they're going to come in there and instantly be dad or mom, that's certainly something that needs to be considered and worked through, because that shows a lack of understanding about step family formation. So I would encourage that couple to get some books and training and reading this and talk about these kinds of issues of parenting before they start their time together. This will certainly alleviate a number of problems that may arise and involve the children and be very hurtful. I think another one is to talk about, or yellow light would be, what is the step-parent's role going to be, and is that going to be received by the children? Have both of the couple had input on that and agree on how they're going to pursue that goal with the children?
And that could be something they discuss with the children too, right?
Absolutely.
I'm not saying, listener, I am not saying that you let your kids determine what the role of the step-parent's going to be. What I am saying is that you at least hear them out to have a sense of what they think is an appropriate space for the step-parent in the beginning as the family is beginning to merge. That's information that helps you then make decisions about what else you talk about with them, how you go about it, beginning to craft some vision for them of what role that will be, and so they can begin to get used to the idea. Like, sometimes you need to steer them in a better direction about what they expect. To not hear them out at all is to just then be blindsided by their reaction once the marriage has already happened and the step-parent has moved in. You know, I got to echo what you guys have said. Differences in parenting, that's a huge one. We know statistically that that causes a lot of conflict in blended families when there is a vast difference in parenting philosophy. So I'm so glad you guys mentioned that one. But I got to follow up and ask you, like, let me just play devil's advocate here. What do you mean ongoing anger with a former spouse? I'm dating this woman, Ron, and she is fabulous, and she is just great, and she is godly, and yeah, she's got an ex-husband who's loony, and you know, but what does that matter? I'm not marrying him, I'm marrying her. Why should I care if they have some issues?
Well, what we know is that the former spouse is going to have an effect on everything that happens in that relationship, whether they live next door or they live in another planet. They're going to affect not only the partner, but they're going to affect the children. More importantly, if you've got unresolved issues with that individual, you're going to bring those unresolved issues with you into your next relationship, guaranteed. And if there's still anger, then it means that you haven't really resolved that relationship well enough
to be able to put all your energy into a new relationship. So that's an incredible red flag for that reason. You want to give all of your attention spiritually, emotionally, relationally. You want to give it all to a new relationship and to the children. You don't want to be bringing with you the baggage of anger and unresolved stuff from a past relationship.
So what do I do if I'm listening to you guys talk about this and I'm going, oh my goodness, that's my situation. Are you telling me I have to break up? What do I do?
I think you need to take some time to forgive your former spouse, to own the peace that is yours and to forgive them and to realize that that person is going to be in your life in some fashion for the remainder of at least the children's lives. And so I need to be okay with that. I need to learn how to manage that, to not let that define who I am, to not let that define my moods or emotions, and to realize that that's just something I'm going to have to make adjustments to. But it starts with me forgiving that person and before a holy God saying, okay, this is something I need to do. I need to let go of those things that happened in the past and so that I can focus more on the present and on the future.
Address that from the other partner's point of view. So it's not my issue to forgive. It's the person I'm dating. What do I do? Do I put this relationship on hold? Do I break up? Do I just slow down? What do I do?
I think what I would do if I was in that place is I would say, I understand that you have from the legitimate reasons to be angry at that person, but I'm also aware that that person's going to be in our life from this point on. And so how we manage that relationship becomes important in our relationship. And so what can I do? How can I support you as you kind of resolve those things, that anger or no matter how legitimate it is? You know, God doesn't tell us that we only have to forgive under certain circumstances. He asks us to forgive. We're not to reconcile. You know, that may never be reconciled because we don't have any control over the other person. But as far as it's up to me, I need to be at peace with that individual and I need to forgive them, so that I'm not dwelling on that. Because if I don't forgive, I'm always going to be dwelling on that. And if I'm dating somebody like that, I know that that's going to take energy away from our relationship.
And I would just add that point he made about control. Oftentimes, what happens between former spouses is one's trying to control the other or prevent certain things from happening. And the sooner that the spouse that's getting remarried can understand she or he cannot control the other one or even what happens when the children are with that person, but they can choose to have a different attitude and they can pray about how best to manage it, that will certainly help them live a little more at peace. And then it won't interfere with the current relationship or the new relationship.
You've been listening to my conversation with Jeff and Judy Parziel about their workbook, Marrying with Children. I'm Ron Deal, and this is Family Life Blended. You may be wondering if the complex dynamics around an engaged couple's relationship ever amounts to a deal breaker. Well, I asked Jeff and Judy that question, and in just a moment, you'll hear their answer. But before we get there, do me a favor right now. Give us a review. That'll help others find this podcast. And one person said, thoroughly enjoying this new podcast from Family Life. Another wrote, my husband and I recently became a blended family. During our mornings, we've been listening to these relatable and encouraging stories. Look no further for a podcast that is enlightening and helpful. Man, I appreciate those words. Do you remember when Jeff said that a biological parent and a future step-parent need to hold the tension between what they want, like assured engagement, and what their children need? The fantasy that love will happen quickly between all family members sometimes makes people want to push through that tension. But his advice is to hold it. Slow down. Don't rush. Candidly, I gotta say, I think this is very difficult for people who have fallen in lust. They've fallen in infatuation. Who have fallen in love. What's that old adage? Our brains are amazing. They work 24/7, 365 days a year until we fall in love. Hey, if you want a good blend, a healthy family merger, and I think that's what you want, then you have to move toward marriage with wisdom, respecting the needs of your children. No, they don't determine when or if you get married, but they should influence your decision and the timing of when you get married. Again, you can learn more about this from the Parziel's workbook, Marrying with Children. The show notes will tell you how you can get a copy. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcast. Just search Family Life Blended with Ron Deal. And remember to look at those show notes for additional resources. At Family Life, we are committed to serving you by providing excellent resources. Our next Blended and Blessed livestream event has been scheduled for April 25th, 2020. You can go online today at blendedandblessed.com and learn how you can be a part of that event. If you like road trips and live anywhere near Houston, we would love to have you join us at the live event at Houston's First Baptist Church. But you don't have to make a road trip. You can sit at home and watch this event on your smartphone, or you can get some people together at your church and experience it with a group of other couples. Learn how, again, blendedandblessed.com. Now, before we're done, I asked Jeff and Judy the deal breaker question. You know, if somebody's dating and they have a very difficult former spouse relationship and things are not getting any better, or maybe they're seeing some red lights, is that cause for a breakup?
I think that's definitely an indicator of a cause to put the pause button on. And what that looks like has to do with a couple and perhaps a counselor they may choose to work with, because it means that there's still some work to be done. And that doesn't mean the marriage can't happen, but it means that it's important to take care of some of these things up front, because not only do you then prevent hurting the person you love and want to marry, but you also prevent hurting the kids, because they're eventually going to get drug into that as well.
I would agree. I think it's the hitting the pause button, but it also being honest and sober enough to say these things have to get resolved before you guys get married. They will infect your marriage at every level if you don't work them through. Now, every problem it has some kind of a solution, whether it's fixable or it just needs to be managed. But are you willing to spend the time? Do you value each other and the relationship enough to spend the time to work through those things? It hasn't been very often when I was pastoring that I would say, I don't think this relationship is going to work. It's really tough for a couple to hear that. But certainly we can give them some sobering honesty and say, these things will sabotage and sink your relationship if you don't deal with them now.
Well, the holidays are just around the corner, so next time our season 2 podcast guests will be sharing their best tip for surviving the holidays, because not everybody has the same expectations.
I thought my stepkids would want to embrace my traditions and all the fun things that came for Christmas for me, but then I had to let it go and say, you know what? I wasn't that interested in my step-parents' Christmases or family, so why would they be?
It's Holiday Counsel from A Choir of Voices, next time on Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our Family Life Legacy partners for making this podcast possible. Our chief audio engineer is Keith Lynch. Bruce Goff, our producer. Mastering engineer, Justin Adams. Theme music provided by Braden Deal. Family Life Blended is produced by Family Life and is part of the Family Life Podcast Network.